Does Nori still have these? Do you have this? Sorry. The other thing.
Okay, do one thing at a time here.
I know.
All right, committee, okay. Attached to Mr. Linden's testimony, some amendments on dated May 29th. Let's mark those as dash 13, please, so that we can make reference to them. So what you're just being handed out, the amendments would be marked as dash 13s. All right, Mr. Linden, I'm sorry, go ahead.
My apology for not having that distributed. What I'll do is I'll run through the changes we've agreed on in the working group and identify who proposed them and what essentially they do. Starting with Section 5, Subsection 6, at the request of the District Attorney's Association, we've, in the A-12 amendments, have provided language that recognizes that a defendant may waive the opportunity for a hearing by a stipulated order. And that's really a acknowledgement of current practice.
Mr. Chair, that's lines 5 and 6 of the A-12 amendments, page 1.
Thank you. And that is a consensus item, is that right?
That's correct. I'm going to, on all of the A-12 amendments, with the exception of the one beginning on line 22 of page 1 of the A-12 amendments, with that exception, it's my understanding that everything else in the A-12 amendments are consensus and have been agreed upon by all the interested parties. So then moving on to the next section 6 and section 27A, these are Judicial Department suggestions, and what we've done here is avoided what we think is a constitutional problem of improperly shifting the burden to defendants in proceedings for the failure to pay a fine or restitution. And that, in the A-12 amendments, I believe that is the amendment that begins on the first page, line 10. No, I'm sorry.
Line 8, sorry.
Okay, then moving on again. Another amendment to Section 6 and subsections 6 and 8. This was suggested by Representative Mannix, a new subsection that specifies that punitive sanction burdens, the burden in punitive sanctions is beyond a reasonable doubt.
Lines 19 and 20, page 1.
And those are in 19 through 21 of A-12. Subsection 7 of Section 6 is proposed to be amended to require notice of an intent to rely on an affirmative defense of inability to comply in punitive contempt proceedings.
That is
10 through 17.
10 through 17 of page 1 of the A-12 amendments.
Right.
Now, there's a new section 7A, and that deals with giving the state, the prosecutors, in the Attorney General's office, notice and an opportunity to be heard before a court grants a defendant's immunity request that's been made by a private attorney in a remedial contempt proceeding. The Attorney General's office, and I know they have a representative here, was concerned about how that would play out in the real world. And what we've done essentially in the new Section 7A is provide.
These are what we're calling the Dash 13 amendments.
Dash 13 amendments. This is the only issue in the Dash 13 amendments.
This is an issue that is in dispute.
I don't think so anymore. I think that the Dash 13s.
Additional issue.
All right.
The Dash 13s resolve it satisfactorily.
Okay.
And essentially what they do is the prosecution does get a notice, an opportunity to be heard on an immunity request, and we also provide that instead of granting immunity to compel testimony, the court can continue a contempt proceeding until any related criminal action is disposed of, so that there's less chance for the interruption of a pending criminal proceeding. And again, I think I can state the Dash 13 amendments are now acceptable to the interested parties. Section 25B of the original bill, and I'm going back to the Dash A12 amendments now. And this was a District Attorney's Association suggestion, defines forfeiture in ORS Chapter 136 so that immunity doesn't preclude post-judgment collection, and that's a consensus agreement.
This is on page 2 of the Dash 12,
page 2,
line 20.
And it's labeled Section 25B starting at line 8.
Can I interject a comment here?
Representative Mannix.
Okay. To ease the comfort level of the committee, the good news is that although we pointed out certain rejected amendments, I'm not aware of any people that are going to come in here and demand that those amendments be put into the bill. I may be wrong. If someone's out there that wants to, please raise your hand right now. I don't see any hands. What I'm getting at is the working group tried to deal with all the ideas, and the working group was satisfied with these changes. There was bits and pieces of correspondence and communiques from people saying, you ought to do this, you ought to do that, and we've rejected certain ideas, some of which were already rejected in the Senate. I'm not sure anyone's coming today to demand those be put back in, and I just thought I'd explain that we're sort of reviewing is what is a consensus effort among Great. Various groups.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Lennon.
Mr. Chairman, those Dash A12 amendments and the Dash 13 amendment that I've just briefly outlined represent the proposed amendments to this bill. Okay. We've also provided in the letter that counsel referenced earlier from Ms. Cross and my staff to Representative Mannix the issues that didn't make it into the amendments. They were, I think, fully and fairly discussed, and I don't think that the proponents would feel they didn't have a clear opportunity to make their case, but they did not make it through the consensus process.
Now, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Are we in work session?
We are. There are several other people who would like to be heard
okay.
on the proposals.
Then I won't make any motions okay. at this time.
Further questions, Mr. Linden?
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wells, Mr. McLaughlin, do you need to be, would like to be heard?
I don't know. Mr. Wells said no.
Mr. Wells said no, for
Mr.
the record.
Mr. McLaughlin is walking to the table.
Thank you, Chairman Clark. Members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to be heard very briefly. I want to concur in what Mr. Linden presented to you and what Representative Mannix brought to your attention, that the A13 amendments do take care of the Justice Department's and the criminal side of the District Attorney's Office's problems with the prior immunity proposals. And we think that's a good solution, that'll work well in the trial courts for all the parties involved. The one other area I did want to address was an understanding that we have of the context of the limitations on incarceration in the bill, and that would be our understanding as the bill came across from the Senate, and I believe is everyone's understanding that the current remedial sanctions provide for an up to 6 months incarceration for each separate act of contempt, and that similar or identical acts of contempt, if repeated separately, can be subject to serial, if you will, punishments by the court. The example, of course, is the witness who refuses to testify is subject to a remedial act, a remedial sanction for contempt. Does not testify if, again, brought back before the court and in a separate proceeding, again, refuses to testify or to perform some act ordered by the court. The original sanction would have applied to the first act of contempt, but if a subsequent willful failure to obey the court's order occurred, that would be permissible under the current structure of the bill to seek a separate proceeding.
Mr. Chairman, it is agreed and understood, and it is the intention of the bill to allow that to occur.
Okay,
thank you.
On the record, great. All right, we are in work session. Representative Mannix.
Move the A12 amendments. A12 amendments. A12 amendments.
Could I ask
with one modification? No? Counsel?
Yes.
Yeah, it's lines 21.
Lines 20. Does 21 stay in or stay out? 21 to 24 comes 21 out.
24 and first seven lines of page 2.
First seven line of page 2.
Okay.
Representative Mannix moves the A12 amendments with the modification accepting lines 21 through 24, page 1, lines 1 through 7, page 2. Is there further discussion of that motion?
I want to ask
Representative Parks.
What is Pew amendments? Are they all rejected or?
Those were all things that we discussed and decided that were not needed.
Further discussion of the motion? Is there objection to the motion? It's adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Move the dash 13 amendments from Judicial Department.
Representative Mannix moves what we have designated as the dash 13 amendments dated May 29, 1991 from the Judicial Department. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Move the bill as amended. Full committee. Due pass.
Representative Mannix moves Senate Bill 376 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Panseri?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill is passed to the full committee. Representative Mannix will be asked to carry that bill. And on behalf of the committee, Representative Mannix would like to thank you and the working group for the good work on that. It made what could have been a difficult process very, very easy. We appreciate your hard work. We will open the
excuse me. God bless you.
Open the work session on House Bill 3516.
Is this a work session?
A work session. We're not scheduled for public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3516. Council, this was one of, I think, a series of three bills brought to us on the whole question of child custody. Was it House Bill 3515 that we essentially amended and put into another bill? The friendly parent, what we would call the friendly parent?
3515 was revised but took the basic concept of parts of this, of 3516, and yet put in 3515 and moved it. Is that what you asked me?
Yes.
Okay. The answer is yes.
Okay. And would you remind us where we are on House Bill 3516?
This was scheduled for a public hearing. A month or so ago, the issue that is raised in this bill deals with the presumption of creation of a presumption of joint custody in child divorce, in child custody cases.
All right, thank you. Mr. Koenig is here. Mr. Koenig was here.
Are there any proposed amendments to this?
No, I don't believe so.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to do any sneak attacks, but I really don't want to see this bill again. And I've had a motion, but I won't do it right now in case someone's here to testify.
Mr. Wells, you testified before, didn't you?
You did.
Correct, and I don't need to testify again unless the committee has questions and invites.
Mr. Chairman.
So,
where the proponent of the bill is. Representative, who was asking to be recognized? Representative Mannix.
I move to table the bill.
Representative Mannix moves to table House Bill 3516. The motion is non-debatable. The clerk will call the roll on the motion to table.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Park?
Aye.
Representative
Panseri?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3516 is tabled. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3516 at the work session. Reopen the public hearing, or the work session on House Bill 2944. And Mr. Barker.
Mr. Barker gave me his message.
Sorry?
Mr. Barker talked to me. I had to go testify in front of another hearing.
Counsel.
Mr. Barker had a chance to review the bill. As he read it, it would not affect the mental health division, and so therefore he has no position on the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
On this bill, Mr. Grundfossen, I always want to say his name wrong, and I apologize for that. I'm learning. It's Grundfossen. It's still here, and I'd like to, if I could, ask him to step up again to talk
Sorry,
about
going up, Mr. Grundfossen.
This bill is not something that we just tripped into. We went back to a piece of legislation that was carefully worked over in 1987 and chose that as an alternative model because the model that we had for 91, the 91 model was an Edsel. And we went back to a classic instead that hadn't gotten through both houses but had been carefully worked over in one house. There's still that gap in language in the amended version, but the rest of it impressed me as a very carefully formulated plan. Now, Representative Bell has raised a concern about what I'll call the social gap here. The people who can't afford all these highfalutin services, on the other hand, are not criminals or whatever. But the thrust, and this is where I want to ask Mr. Grundfossen's help, the thrust of this is really when there's a community action group that's trying to help folks, this bill would give them a mechanism to go out and help those folks and help overcome the barrier of drug dependency or alcoholism in getting to those folks. And there wouldn't be an economic requirement there. This bill was not really designed so that someone who was wealthy could suddenly avail themselves of the courts. Frankly, people who are in those kinds of situations usually have other help mechanisms available to them. They don't need to use this kind of a commitment procedure normally. It is designed to get at folks who are on the margin of society where there's community action groups who want to help, but frankly, they have to have some opportunity to force someone through the initiation of treatment, but they're going to have to use the judicial process to do it. We used to have this kind of legislation available years ago, but the line of commitment was so low that there were problems. And instead of using that process, there weren't resources available to help people. What you had was vagrancy statutes and statutes where people were put into holding tanks and the like. Nothing was done in terms of treatment. This legislative package, and if you recall the testimony, is designed to allow community action groups who've put together a package of funding and are willing to pay to help people to give them some leverage. The government wouldn't be the leverage. The court would provide the leverage power to say, yes, you've got a drug dependency problem. You may not want to face up to it, but with the competent physician, a licensed physician's confirmation, and with adjudication by the court that you're in serious difficulty because of your drug dependency, we are now going to put you into a treatment program, even if you don't want it. Now, am I picking up on the right tone here, Mr. Grundfossen?
Who's paying for it?
The people who want to carry out the program.
Chairman. The bill.
So if this, for example, would set it up so that if AA, if a spouse went to AA, the Al-Anon part of it, and, you know, they worked with the spouse and determined that the other person did really have a problem, then it would be the organization that could guarantee the payment? So they would have someone to turn to? Okay.
Well, the organization doesn't guarantee to pay. They have to ensure that the investigation, that all the costs attendant to this process will be taken care of if we have the amended language in
but
here.
But you included treatment, didn't you? So
yes.
Isn't that pretty inclusive of the whole shebang?
Yes.
Could I ask a couple questions?
Representative Parks, yes, please.
I thought this is something that I could support, and I want to make sure that this little twist here at the end isn't the way it is. I guess if you're a lawyer for a long time, you see a lot of people who actually cross over the line, and they're really not making a conscious decision anymore. They're so shot from their abuse that it almost does become a mental illness. Those kind of people I approve of letting the courts intervene. But on the other hand, I'm real reluctant to be a party to authorizing the courts to intervene into somebody that's making a conscious choice, even if it is to be an alcoholic. Because I think that's something you can do in the United States, as dumb as that may sound to people that choose not to do that. I want to get your view, because I think Representative Mannix has said it both ways, in that this has given the leverage to involuntarily treat people who can make a conscious decision not to be treated, even if we don't believe that's the choice they ought to be making for their life.
Can I start with the answer and let him pick up?
Okay, sure, anybody.
Sometimes when I'm responding to a question, I may be responding too simply, because I was responding to Representative Bell. I was assuming in that answer a lot of requirements in the statute, because we're going to have to show the person is incapacitated as a result of alcoholism or drug dependency. And under the definitions here and the process, the court's going to have to determine that the person, specifically determine that the person is alcoholic or drug dependent, that the person's health is deteriorating. And that's going to have to be evidenced by the presence of one or more medical complications due to alcoholism or drug dependency. And the court's also going to have to determine that the person is in need of a more sustained treatment program than is generally available. And as an those are the kinds of steps that the court's going to have to go through. It's not just, gee, you've got a problem with alcohol, or gee, you've chosen to consume alcohol or drugs, and therefore we're going to commit you. That's not the kind of approach that would be taken.
But go ahead. You want to comment?
Well, I'm sitting here nodding my head. For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Peter Grundfossen. I represent the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities, and we originally brought this bill to the attention of Representative Mannix and are pleased that the committee is taking time with it. Let me say, before we go any further, Representative Parks, that we are delighted with the appearance of the so-called 1987 bill. I was put on the track of this program by my organization and found a bill that seemed to serve the purposes, and that's the bill that I brought to you originally as 2944. Then the so-called 1987 bill emerged in the course of that hearing process, and now we have that before you, and it's a much better bill. This is a much better bill than what I originally brought. And now, in direct answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, Representative Parks, what Representative Mannix has said is exactly right. If you'll look at the bottom of page 2 of the Dash 2 amendments, in section 2, it lays this out clearly. A person may be voluntarily committed under this act when it is determined by the court that the person is incapacitated as a result of alcoholism or drug dependency. In order to find that a person is incapacitated as a result of alcoholism or drug dependency, a court must find specifically that, one, the person is an alcoholic or drug dependent person whose health is deteriorating as evidenced by the presence of one or more medical complications. Now stop right there. Stop right there and turn back to page 2. We've gotten to the top of page 3. Turn back to page 2 and you see the list of medical complications as to alcoholism that the court must find are apparent. So the individual has to be incapacitated, he has to be alcoholic, and he has to be suffering from these specific symptoms.
Can I stop you for a minute?
Yes.
Almost all alcoholics, I'm not a real expert on alcoholism, I'm telling you, and you can tell me the misconception, suffer from cirrhosis of the liver, don't they?
I don't know that. I'm not an expert either, and I don't know that.
I think we talked about a little bit before, but my conception is if a person is an alcoholic and they want to continue to be an alcoholic, you can do pretty much what you want to do. They're going to continue to be an alcoholic. And so I guess my question is, if they don't really want to change, what can we do about it?
The key word here is incapacitated. Now, I'm not quite sure what incapacitated will mean to the court, but incapacitated in lay terms, that I understand it, has always meant inability to function at a reasonable level as a person in our society. so that I think that the standard against which the court is held here is very, very high.
Hey, but what, could I continue on, Mr. Chairman?
Please do, Representative Parsons.
What incapacitate is going to mean to the court is what you and I and the rest of the committee decide it's going to mean. That's why we're talking about it. And I guess incapacitated to me means that your condition is such that you've almost been deprived of a rational choice. In other words, your situation is bad enough that you don't really have the what we would call the exercise of free will to make this decision.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parks, that is clearly the intent of the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities, and I think it was the intent expressed by the four witnesses that I brought up here when we had the hearing. We have people who are down on the streets, knocked out, drunk, and who are sick and unable to care for themselves, and who are taken advantage of by others on the streets as a result. Those are the people that we're trying to protect.
And I agree we should do that. Okay. I would be much more comfortable if that some definition was included here by my friend who likes to amend these as we go, and also that provided a standard by which the court should make this determination. And I think since we're talking about liberty here, that it should be at least clear and convincing.
Can I help with that?
Okay.
I guess I get to call on myself since I'm temporarily chairing this. How do you like the idea of saying on page 2 at the bottom, we've already said the court must find, we could say, by clear and convincing evidence, that would first take care of it, a court must find by clear and convincing evidence. Specifically, I would say a court must specifically find, instead of clarify this, a court must specifically find by clear and convincing evidence that. That gets you into clear and convincing. And then the person is an alcoholic or drug-dependent person, here's the new phraseology perhaps, who is not capable of exercising independent judgment as to the person's own welfare. And then you go on to the rest of these tests.
Okay, now we're getting, we're warming up to
think about that for a while.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes, Representative Sinceri, then counsel.
I have a concern about this, too, and I'm when I was in the military, an officer there, a company commander, I had somewhat to do with some drug rehabilitation programs and working with people who had some of those problems. And since I've been out of the military and not involved in that, I've been involved with people who have had some problems in terms of alcoholism. And there hasn't been any doubt in my mind that people who are taken to these programs, and I've been involved in it myself personally, taking people to these programs to be helped, that if they don't want to be there, I don't care how much money you spend on them or how long they're there, it doesn't work. It doesn't help. And I have a serious concern about forcing this rehabilitation, quote unquote, on these people. I still have a question in my mind as to the constitutionality of it, even in terms of the Fifth Amendment. We're infringing on their liberty to do what they want to do in this country. But we do help them in terms of what you've described. We have detox centers, and they're picked up on the streets, and they're taken into these centers, and they're dried out, and it doesn't cost them anything. But to force them into a lengthy treatment for this kind of thing, I really have serious questions as to whether or not we have the right to do that.
Mr. Chairman, responding to Representative Sunseri, I have brought with me today Mr. Richard Harris, who is the longtime manager of the Detoxification Center in Multnomah County. We had hoped to have him testify at the original hearing on HB 2944. Unfortunately, he had to be out of the state on business on that day, and we brought here instead his immediate supervisor, Debbie Wood, who is the director of Central City Concern in downtown Portland. I have Mr. Harris here, and he can respond especially to that. If you'll recall, committee, the testimony of the experts that I brought to the hearing was to the contrary, Representative, and that is that people can be involuntarily committed and successfully treated. The literature on the subject has a significant body of that work, and I'd let Mr. Harris speak to that.
Mr. Grunfossen and Mr. Harris, perhaps you could also... That's my understanding, and I share Representative Sunseri's concern, also as one who has seen the alcoholic process and the commitment process again and again. And it seems to me that used to be 5, 10, 15 years ago, the sort of commonly accepted notion was you couldn't be helped unless you wanted to be helped. And now with so-called intervention and some of the other, there's beginning to be some questions raised about that assumption. So I think Representative Sunseri has perhaps two concerns, one of which is the propriety of committing someone against their will in this whole area, and second is the effectiveness. And Mr. Harris, I appreciate your being here and wonder if you can talk with us about that.
Can Representative Bell. Can I respond to his comment before he starts his statement? I would urge you to realize that there's two ways of looking at helping people. One is when the state government is paying for services, we weigh and balance effectiveness. And maybe even if it was 90% ineffective, we would choose not to offer service.
Dependency.
You're talking about the blanks on page 2 of the bill?
Yes. But these are going to have to be approved by this committee. They're going to have to take a look at the list, but I'm not capable right now of giving you a list.
Let me suggest this, Representative Mannix. Let me suggest that we leave that open, that when the bill, assuming the bill makes it to full committee, that at the full committee we offer those in the nature of technical amendments.
But that we make it clear to people better take a good look at them.
Right.
And if there's a problem, then there's we should refer the bill back to subcommittee.
I think that's the way to handle that. So that we have a look at them before we're asked to vote on them, because I'm uncomfortable taking that as a conceptual amendment with that much openness.
So I appreciate that, Mr.
We'll leave the bill with those blanks in it for right now.
Otherwise, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the bill as amended to the full committee, recognizing the need for that technical amendment.
All right. Representative Mannix moves House Bill 2944 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion on the bill, and before we kick that off, let me just ask the committee members to stick around for a bit. We have floor session at 5. I'd like to bring House Bill 3516 back, the one that was tabled a few minutes ago, for the purposes of having some amendments presented to the committee. So stick around, please. The bill, House Bill 2944 as amended, has been moved to the full committee. Further discussion.
I would wonder if you'd be interested in changing this, whose health is deteriorating, to something a little bit more severe than that.
I'm open to that.
Representative Parks.
Show me your mastery of the English language and give me a fast change for...
I want their health
substantially
to be in severe danger.
Representative Parks, let me offer a friendly amendment. What if the phrase was, whose health has substantially deteriorated? Adds the word substantially and puts it in the past tense. Will that help?
Yep.
I agree with that.
Right. Representative Mannix amends his motion to the full committee so that on page 2 and 3 of the dash 2 amendments, the phrase, whose health is deteriorating, is changed to whose health has substantially deteriorated.
To the full motion, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
This bill is not being offered simply out of some idealistic notion that someone somewhere will work on it. There is a substantial community action group in Portland which has already come forward and said, give us the opportunity and we will proceed. We want to work with these folks. Now, I don't know if this is going to succeed or not. And I'm realistic, as I think Representative Sunseri has pointed out, about all the dynamics of this. But if I want to give these folks a chance, I really like to see them go out there and do what they can to help other people. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, we have a process out there. People will stop using it because they're going to have to pay for it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bell.
I just want to comment, too, for those who are still struggling with this part of the bill. We aren't mandating that anybody has to do anything or has to spend money, but
There are individuals who, when they walk down a street and see somebody incapacitated and their health deteriorating because of alcoholism, view that as some kind of supervised suicide. They feel the necessity to offer any kind of help that they can.
Oh, you're going to take that.
I think people I'm talking to aren't listening.
No, they're talking about it, addressing your concern.
Oh, now I think he's listening.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was talking to you.
I'm sorry.
There are people who view people who are completely incapacitated laying on the street in the drunken stupor as basically committing suicide. And if they are willing, without asking the questions, well, how successful will this be? You know, what have we got to gain? All these kinds of questions. I think we ought to have that window available to them to offer, you know, an avenue of rescue. Because it's certainly voluntary, and certainly by the time they reach these conditions that we've listed, they are committing suicide, basically. So it's a lifeline. And I encourage you to support the bill because of that reason.
Thank you, Representative Bell. The chair is going to move a conceptual amendment, one more conceptual amendment, friendly amendment, I hope, Representative Mannix, that would be a 2-year sunset on the -2 amendments, so that we can come back in 2 years, look at how we've done, and
keep the other part.
Absolutely, permanent. Keep the -3 amendments permanent, but the sunset would only apply to the -2 amendments 2 years, so that the 1993 legislature would reexamine the question in light of developments between now and then, and see how the statute's being used. Would you consider that a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Mannix considers that a friendly amendment. Council, you can make sure that happens.
Mr. Chair,
the bill as amended has been moved to the full committee. Further discussion, Representative Sanseri.
I just wanted to note that there are several places in the bill where it says that the maximum time of involuntary commitment will be 6 months, and I'd like that to reflect that it's
the changes.
Changed to 90 days in every place in the
we'll
bill.
We'll make sure that that's reflected throughout the bill.
That's agreed. It should be 3 months
for
throughout.
For recommitments as well.
Pardon?
For recommitments as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, further discussion. The bill has been moved to the full committee. Representative Parks.
I'm not real comfortable. I'm comfortable with what we're trying to do. I don't know that we really need to do it in light of the guardianship statute. I'm going to vote for it, but I'm going to read the 20 pages of amendment before we talk about it again. Oh, I might change my mind.
Thank you. Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bauman?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Passeri?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Bill's passed the full committee. Representative Mannix, carry the bill, and we appreciate your hard work on that. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 2944 and reopen the work session on House Bill 3516. The chair will move reconsideration of the vote by which the committee tabled House Bill 3516. And to that motion, Mr. Koenig, who is one of the proponents of the bill, has proposed some amendments. He was not in the room at the time we tabled the bill. And I'd like to extend him the courtesy of being able to present those amendments for the committee's consideration. So, without objection, the bill is back in front of us. Council, do we have the amendments?
Yes, in your packets today, they're actually written. There are amendments proposed to 3514, but I believe Mr. Koenig will speak to them today.
Mr. Koenig, would you come on up, please? Committee, in your packet is some amendments marked 3514-1. I think what's going to happen is that Mr. Koenig is going to propose that we amend those into House Bill 3516. Mr. Koenig, I'm sorry we missed you earlier. We have to be on the floor in 10 minutes, so we have to work quickly here.
Let me apologize for that, but I was out working on 3516 in the hall with one of the opponents, Oregon Legal Services. I told him that I would recognize him. Do you have the submissions of today in front of you?
Yes, we do.
Your written basically, testimony. I'm addressing the fact that each of the opponents to this bill that testified earlier haven't responded substantively, but I omitted Oregon Legal Services, and I apologize to him in the hall for not putting him in writing in this statement, but polled him to ask, excuse me, to ask if there was any opposition or a rebuttal statement about his concerns that I had addressed, basically that joint custody would provide an ongoing possibility for abuse to for the spouses to hit each other, ex-spouses, and he had nothing to say. So I just want that to be, for his sake, acknowledged. There is one amendment that I'd like to bring up for joint custody, which would make it in comedy with other proposed law. It's the last paragraph on page 2. Oh, before we get that far, on the first paragraph...
Okay, we need to know what you're... Are you working off 3514-1?
No, I'm still on 3516. It's on the agenda, and I have to explain how 3514 got here today.
Okay, 3514 is not in front of us.
That's right. Okay. But let me start with 3516, because it's here on the agenda. Dr. Boverman testified that couples faced with joint custody would tend to use the tactic of sexual abuse allegations to rule out that possibility. I polled the district attorneys of the three major counties in this state to see if their experience would indicate that. They all said no, and I'd like the record to be altered by hand, perhaps right on that first paragraph of the second page today. McIntyre from Multnomah County.
To what are you referring? Are you referring to the bill itself?
When
you're talking about which page, are you talking about
second,
House Bill 3516?
No, the second page of my submissions today.
Okay.
Okay. Substance of testimony of Richard L. Koenig, May 29, 1991.
Right.
Okay.
The first paragraph needs to have a little note that McIntyre confirmed
that
Boverman's off base as of 12:45 today, before I came down here.
Okay. Mr. Koenig, what we need you to do is explain the proposed amendments that you have.
Okay.
And we need you to do that in about 3 minutes.
I don't know that 3514 has been here yet.
No,
but
we have not had a public hearing on House Bill 3514.
Okay. 3514 is brought today because it has a relating clause similar to 3516.
Okay. So
basically, it would...
Is your proposal then to amend into House Bill 3516...
If that's the most...
A modified version of House Bill 3514.
I'd like to keep them separate, but if that's the most convenient avenue to have a consideration of that issue, I'd like that to happen. Basically, it fixes an anomaly in the law. In current law, we award custody to a parent without consideration of the best interest of the child at 109.175, and 3514, I don't know what's the matter with my throat here, largely addresses that problem. And it also is in conformity with the presidential mandate to the public, to every state, to break the cycle of poverty. It's basically a proposal to... put children in environments where they have adequate economic opportunities, and that those children will be supported by parents who are financially competent wherever and whenever possible, in preference to state support or in preference to a parent who is financially incompetent. All other things being equal, placing the children with the financially competent person rather than having the financially competent person paying the state and then the state paying the parent, the custodial parent.
All right. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Koenig?
On 3514?
Well, the committee voted
you
once
you
to table
3516.
So the committee does not like 3516. And so at this point you're advocating for a modified version of House Bill 3514 to be amended into House Bill 3516.
Yes, if that's how I'm going to get 3516. If it's amended, if 3514 is amended into 3516, does that mean that 3516 must therefore be alive enough that it can be amended into?
The motion, if someone on the committee makes a motion, they will probably move to gut House Bill 3516 and insert your modified amendments of House Bill 3514 into what was House Bill 3516.
Well, both bills would be an improvement over what we got, but they do not take the place of one for the other. And
questions for Mr. Koenig? All right, thank you very much, Mr. Koenig. Appreciate that.
Thank you. I'll assume that the submissions on 3516, as accepted, will be part of the record.
Correct.
And basically, it asks for a win by default because the opponents to the bill failed to respond, right?
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, committee. There's proposed amendments to House Bill 3516. In order to reach those amendments, we would need a motion to remove House Bill 3516 from the table. In the absence of such a motion, we will close the work session on House Bill 3516, and we are adjourned.